Brett Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on the Blitz. 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on the Blitz Facebook page. Find the Blitz, click like, you are good to go. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, at AJ is the real, at Jongi Football, at Degenerates 975. You can also text the show at 713-780-3776. And if you missed anything from the first hour, a lot of college football, a lot of NFL, a lot of Texans, all available at podcastarena.com. Go check that out. You can also pick up a copy of your Blitz book right there at podcastarena.com. Anyway, a couple things before we get to the NFL. But 409 says, Oklahoma lost to Texas. I don't see how they get into a playoff over a one-loss Ohio State with a loss to Michigan State.
Because they won their conference and they beat Baylor. They beat TCU. They beat Oklahoma State.
And going in and winning at Tennessee, all those wins are probably more impressive than anything Ohio State did outside of Michigan.
Ohio State beat Michigan and has done really nothing else. The rest of the season, they were kind of in that mix because
they're Ohio State.
Name brand. And to be fair, I mean, they're the defending champ, and I know the committee's not supposed to take that into consideration, but if you're the defending champ and you go in and you play a Big Ten schedule and you win out, it's you deserve to be there, but they didn't win out.
No. 713-780-ESPN. All right, let's let's get caught up on the NFL because lots of action that we missed. We'll start with the Thursday games. I don't know if we need to say much about Lions 45, Eagles 14.
Man, the Eagles are a total mess. I guess credit some to the Lions. They're playing a lot better as of late. I think it's too late for them to do anything with it, but they're a lot better defensively right now. But I said this, and I may have been wrong. I said that I would play the Lions if Mark Sanchez starts, and I'd play the Eagles if Sam Bradford starts. I don't know that Sam Bradford over Mark Sanchez would have made that much of a difference, but I'm glad Mark Sanchez started.
Yeah, I actually played the Lions there, but somebody asked me this. Can we quit calling the AFC South the worst division and start calling the NFC East the worst division?
I think we can.
And I think that's fair.
Although, that said, I mean, top to bottom, the NFC East is bad, but I think that the Cowboys versus the Titans or the Jags, I might take the Cowboys. So they have two that are
without
really
Tony Romo.
Now that
he's gone for the year again, and of course they lost 33-14. I'm done betting against the Panthers. That team just goes out and wins. They play great defense, and they're just playing at a very high level right now.
Yeah, and you could say all you want about Tony Romo, but
they were getting their ass kicked before he got
I'm saying you could say all you want about him being gone, but without those two pick sixes from Tony Romo, it's a ball game.
Yeah, but
Tony Romo throws two pick sixes and the game's over. So that loss was on Tony as much as it was anyone else.
Bears beat the Packers in Lambeau. There's something going on with the Packers.
There is, but there's also the Bears are playing a lot better. The Bears are going to regret, much like the Texans, it looks like, regret the start of the season that they had, because the Bears are better than what their record at 5-6 says. They're playing so great right now. I mean, to have won three of their last four, and the one loss was against the Broncos by two. That's a team that if they weren't losing games at the beginning of the season, and a lot of it's because of their schedule.
Right.
You know, their losses, Packers, Cardinals, Seahawks, Vikings, Broncos, those are all good losses. The Lions is their bad loss. That's a loss they're going to end up regretting.
Although even that's not a bad loss anymore, the
at
way the
Detroit,
Lions are playing. Yeah.
But that's a team that 5-6, you could argue they're a lot better than that. And their schedule is pretty favorable. Niners, Redskins, Vikings, Bucks, Lions, those are all winnable games.
Yeah. All right, getting into the Sunday games, Raiders go in and beat the Titans 24-21. They kind of hang around that wild card race along with about five or six teams, and the Titans continue to suck.
My boy Derek Carr, he's on to something. The Raiders have found a quarterback. They still can't run the ball, and I don't know how I feel about you letting Marcus Mariota throw three touchdowns, but I don't think the Raiders are good, but this is the best Raiders team we've seen in a long time. It's the first time since I can remember that they've been interesting this late into a season.
The only team in the AFC hotter than the Texans right now is the Kansas City Chiefs, as they beat your Buffalo Bills 30-22. And Spencer Ware out of nowhere.
Spencer Ware, who West goes out with injury. He's out for the game. Obviously, they're without Jamal Charles. He steps in and has a day. 19 carries, 114 yards. I think the most credit should go to Alex Smith, though, who, you know, we've given Alex Smith grief for a long time about not using his wide receivers properly. 9 catches, 160, and a touchdown for Jeremy Maclin. I don't remember the last time he had a stat line like that, much less a Kansas City Chiefs receiver having a stat line like that. You're going back to Dwayne Bowe's heyday.
Well, I don't remember the last time Alex Smith threw an interception either. I mean, the guy's protecting
the
football.
With the ball. Yeah. So careful with it. He's one of those guys who I don't know if he's ever going to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but man, he gives you a chance to win a lot of games. I like Alex Smith.
Colts beat the Bucs 25-12, and I'll say it, their offense looks better with Matt Hasselbeck than it did with Andrew Luck.
It does.
He doesn't turn the ball over.
No, he doesn't. And they're not going to win anything against decent teams if they can't get better than 1 yard per carry on the ground. Yeah. But they did a pretty good job protecting Hasselbeck, he took a couple sacks, but they were all just like for a yard or two. Nothing big, and he did a good job. He's not throwing the ball way downfield, but he's making the right passes at the right time and letting his receivers do the work.
Gets rid of it quickly, too.
Yeah, and Jameis Winston, after having his huge day, looked fairly human.
Yeah. Well, and that's young quarterbacks. They're going to do that. They're going to have big games, and they're going to have games where you go, what the hell?
Yeah, the Colts look good. It'll be interesting to see. What it gives them is the luxury of waiting until Andrew Luck's 100%.
Redskins beat the Giants 20-14. Don't look now, but the Redskins are in control in the NFC East.
Unbelievable. And
boy, Evil Eli showed up early in that
game.
Yeah,
but you know what? Evil Eli did show up, but it's not all on him. And I know the 3 interceptions looks bad, but his receivers did him no favors. They were cutting routes short and letting the ball go through their hands. I mean, for a guy who's got some of the best receivers in the league on the outside, they did him very few favors until Odell started catching the ball, you know, actually using his hands. But you can't lose that game. The Giants are a better team than the Redskins.
Yes, they are.
And they just gave it away. And we're talking about interceptions inside the 5-yard line. That shouldn't happen.
Vikings beat
another team that can't run the ball.
Right.
And that's why that happens.
Well, here's one who can run the ball because Adrian Peterson's still pretty good. Vikings 20-10 over the Falcons, who continue to fade.
Yeah, and Matt Ryan, you talk about evil Matt Ryan, that was what it was. That's everything. Minnesota did a lot right. I mean, obviously, Adrian Peterson is a machine. But Atlanta still had plenty of opportunities to win that game. They ran the ball well. Matt Ryan just sucked is what it boils down to. And you know, I defend Matt Ryan. There's no defending that performance. He was bad.
This team has had no problem moving the ball for weeks. They've had red zone problems. They had turnover problems. And until they start taking care of the ball, they're not going to beat anybody. Bengals crush the Rams 31-7. They get back on track with a pretty easy win. And you know, the Rams, well, when they don't show up, they're pretty awful.
Well, Rams, listen, you know the Rams have bad quarterback play pretty much every week. You can mark that down. What they hope for is Todd Gurley to run for 150.
Get the lead and then...
Todd Gurley ran for 19 yards.
Yeah, that's not
going to
happen.
They're never going to win a football game when that happens.
Chargers go in and beat the Jaguars 31-25. Remember how we're saying, can't believe the Jaguars are 4-point favorites in a game?
Yeah, they should not have been. Phillip Rivers, the good Phillip Rivers, showed up. Blake Bortles had a pretty good day, too. But Phillip Rivers finally starting to get some of his weapons healthy. You know, he had Stevie Johnson out there, had Malcolm Floyd out there. Gates looked the best he's looked in a few weeks. So that's a good win for San Diego. I mean, too little too late to do anything.
But, right. Yeah, they're done.
You know, when you're one of the worst teams in the league, you hope that you can beat one of the other worst teams in the league. And that's what San Diego did on the road.
The Jets beat the Dolphins 38-20. That game was not even as close as a score made it look at the end.
God,
but
the Dolphins fooled people into thinking they were good.
And then they fire their offensive coordinator. And, you know, what a mess. That whole franchise is just a mess right now.
The Dolphins wins this year over the Redskins, the Titans, Texans, and the Eagles. I mean, the Texans, they're going to look back if they
That's
don't make the playoffs.
That's another
they're going to regret losing to this team because this is a bad, bad team. And I'm not sure what the spread will be next week. Dolphins have a home game next week against the Ravens, who are just a total mess right now. Ravens might find a way to beat this team anyway.
Cardinals struggled a little bit with the 49ers. Once again, a double-digit division dog comes through. But Cardinals do what they need to do to win. And, you know, I still think, despite yesterday's efforts, that's one of the best teams in football.
It is, but they took a big blow because Chris Johnson has a broken tibia now. And, you know, they're going to have to fall back to Andre Ellington and David Johnson, hope those guys can give them some good carries. Carson Palmer wasn't at his best yesterday, but he ran one in when they really needed it. And he was the difference in the game. Blaine Gabbert actually played pretty well, played better than anything Colin Kaepernick did all season, which is pretty ridiculous because Blaine Gabbert's not a good football player, and he was playing a good team and actually looked respectable. I don't know if this is more of a – I think it's just a blip on the radar for the Cardinals, a game maybe they didn't take as seriously as they should have, but that team is still very, very good.
And Steelers go in, give the Seahawks a – hell of a game, but Seahawks win at 39-30. And tell you what, the Seahawks defense isn't as impressive, but for the first time this year, they dominated a fourth quarter, and I think that made that's something we have not seen out of the Seahawks this year.
Yeah, the Seahawks defense isn't what it has been. What they still do, though, is they stop the run. And you have to beat them through the air. Fortunately for Pittsburgh, that's what they do best right now anyway. And 456 yards is a lot, but Ben also turned it over a couple times. And Russell Wilson, I've never seen him have a game like this. Of course, he was on my bench on my fantasy team. But 21 of 30, 345, and 5 touchdowns. For a guy who's had a meh season, that's a game where they really needed him and he really stepped up. And that's probably the biggest win the Seahawks could have had, because now Seahawks are sitting in a playoff spot. They're in the same spot as the Texans.
There's so many little things, though, that Mike Tomlin does that drives me nuts. That fake field goal that gets intercepted. That made no sense. Because if you're going to do that, then run the play right away before they can adjust. You don't go there and give the defense a chance to react to it and then run it with Landry Jones in there. What the hell?
Mike Tomlin thinks it's so cute what Mike Tomlin does. And the going for two and the fist pump, it worked, so I can't crap on it too much. But he just does so many things that are unconventional. And then when they don't work, you just go, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. Why would you do that? And at the end of the day, I've been saying this about Pittsburgh's defense. They're very beatable defensively. They're not good. And
they're getting beat up a little bit now, which is not good.
And Russell Wilson found a way to exploit them.
All right.
Lose Jimmy Graham for the year, though.
Yeah, although he hasn't had much of an impact for him, to be honest. And all right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about that night game.
Should make them better running the ball, having, Luke Wilson out there more. And Luke Wilson's a pretty decent receiver. Jimmy Graham just hurts you in the run game. And for them, he hasn't helped a lot in the pass game, so I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. But, you like to have everybody healthy that you can.
Disco Biscuit says, awesome meeting y'all at Knicks on Wednesday. AJ, you don't sound douchey, but you sound more like a bro than you look.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Bro me.
You are the bro. Quick break.
I saw that stuff on Cook Fan, and AJ, you got called a bro.
Oh, well. Bro it up, bro.
I have no comment about message board knuckleheads.
No.
Quick break. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Live from the Gow Studios in Houston, Texas, this is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on the Blitz. 713-780-ESPN is your number. And the last game is one we hit on a little bit in the first hour with the Broncos beating the Patriots in overtime. And Patriots are getting pretty beat up, but I got to give the Broncos credit for playing a really good game. And somebody asked us, I think it was Eric asked us this earlier today, when was the last time the Patriots blew a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter?
I don't know.
I actually was trying to find – I did some research. I couldn't find it. So, it's pretty rare when that happens, but I think the Patriots still kind of control – the number one seed, but that's a good win for the Broncos.
I think that, I said, and by the way, Broncos were one of my plays, right? And I thought that the Broncos would play well when they got down 14 points. I'll admit that I thought they were toast.
Yeah, I was on the other side of that, and I was pretty damn confident in it, but oh well.
But that is a gutty win, and don't get me wrong, they got some help from the officials. Again, I don't ever feel bad for New England, but I am. It's still the officiating continues to be a problem in this league. But you know what? Kudos to them for coming back and gutting it out, and then in overtime, making the right moves, and that's a win that really kind of reaffirmed to me that the Broncos are a legit team.
I still think when it comes playoff time, Gary Kubiak will do something stupid to get them beat.
Well. also, come playoff time, this game would happen in New England.
Right.
And things would probably be a lot different.
The balls would be deflated.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go. The Roberto was asking, and I know you responded, definitely 2-3. Is it time to say goodbye to Jeff Fisher? He's the Rams fan. At some point, does this guy ever get held accountable for never winning? He had a nice little run for about 3 years in Tennessee, but he's been a mediocre coach his entire career. At what point do you say, you know what, time to move on, man?
Listen, I don't think Jeff Fisher is a great coach. I don't know that a lot of coaches are looking to take that Rams job, a lot of coaches with his pedigree. And I think the Rams want to at least, I mean, they at least want to run out their contract with him, because I don't think the Rams are good enough that they're going to bring some, or, you know, they're willing to pay out his contract and bring in some new hotshot who's going to do what with that roster. I think Jeff Fisher will stay till his contract ends, and then they'll try something else. But they'll probably hope that Jeff Fisher retires gracefully at the end of next year.
24-34-1
with the Rams
in 4 years with the Rams.
Not good.
And
last year it looked like they were getting closer.
But that's what his teams always do. They look like they're about to be really good.
Was Nick Foles for Sam Bradford Jeff Fisher's call?
I don't know. And I think that's – somebody should be – well, it's not like it worked out either
way. I mean,
doesn't
Jeff Fisher make all the calls, though?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. If he made that call, he probably should be fired, because Nick Foles, that's a terrible experiment. Whatever you think about Sam Bradford, Nick Foles is worse.
Neither one of them are any good, though. Let's grab a couple phone calls about Bruce wants to weigh in on a topic we were just hitting on. What's up, Bruce?
Hi, guys. I'm a Patriots fan, but the Broncos played a better game. Last week, in the morning, Mike Mutt was talking about how horrible the officiating was. And I'm not hearing too much on ESPN about those calls that were blown last night.
I don't know. I don't know about ESPN. But I've seen plenty of people complaining about it, which, again, listen, were there a lot of were Patriots fans, were they excited to hear about the calls that went their way against Buffalo? I don't think so. I mean, listen, this is the NFL. There's bad calls every week, and we're seeing it more and more. And now we're seeing it more and more in college games, where I just have no idea what some of these calls are, and they review them, and they still let them stand. I don't know what they're doing, but officiating's gotten really bad. And suddenly when it goes against the Patriots, they're not happy about it. Nobody's happy about it. Nobody should be happy about it. They've got to do something. There needs to be more accountability with officials. I said the same thing last week.
We say this every week.
Yeah.
It happens every week. It happens to every team. So I'm almost sick of talking about it, because nothing happens. And,
well, what can happen?
Well, you said make them more accountable, which clearly they're not.
They have a contract, I'm sure, too, or a union, whatever, and they don't have to do it. I've always said the officials should have a press conference where they answer questions, they answer for the calls that they made, just like the coaches have to.
James said, Mike and Mike said this morning, the Patriots have won 45 straight games when taking 14-point leads in the fourth quarter. So there's your answer.
Yeah.
Thank you, James. Maybe I should have been up listening to Mike and Mike this morning.
It's probably fairly regular that they have double-digit leads going into the fourth quarter.
All right, let's try Charles. You're on the Blitz. Go, sir.
Hey, guys. Sports.
Sports, Charles.
I met AJ, you know, last week, Wednesday, and it was cool. We had a good conversation about the college football. So the thing's more for AJ. AJ, I know we talked last week, and you said how Alabama, you know, they're playing like the best, or you said like Arkansas is a better team than most of the conferences out there. What I want to say is the Big Ten has three teams who I think are pretty good. I don't know about Iowa, but I know Michigan State and Ohio State are good. I also think that the ACC has Florida State and Clemson, which are really good. And I just don't see how Alabama can get away with one loss to an Ole Miss team, which isn't good. And I can't figure out how it's like, you know, they're placed on a higher mantle when I feel like the Big Ten and ACC are really two of the best conferences in college football.
Alabama lost to an Ole Miss team, and whatever you think about Ole Miss, Michigan State lost to Nebraska. And Ole Miss is better than Nebraska. I promise you that. I feel like you have got to get over this anti-Alabama thing because it's not going to do you any good, my man. The SEC, while is not nearly as good as it has been, and I blame most of that on the fact that the SEC East is just rottenly bad, but the SEC is not bad enough that they're going to get left out of the playoff with a loss. Like a one-loss team, a one-loss SEC champion is not going to be left out of the playoff. And I know he wants the Big Ten's not going to get two teams before the SEC gets one. It doesn't make sense on any level, And whatever you think about Alabama, I think that if they win, they're right there with Clemson as far as teams that you can have. There's no argument against them to make the playoff. Wherever you want, if you want to argue about where they're seated in the playoff, that's fine. But if look at Oklahoma lost to Texas, and they're pretty safely in. I think when you go through it, you'll see who I think the four playoff teams will be: Clemson, Bama, Michigan State, and Oklahoma. Alabama has the most respectable loss of those teams. Oklahoma losing to Texas and Michigan State losing to Nebraska are worse. I don't think there's any argument you can make that a one-loss Alabama, SEC champion Alabama, isn't deserving to be in the playoff. There isn't. And the SEC isn't as good as it's been, but it's not bad enough to be left out of the playoff with a one-loss champion either.
And they're not going to be either.
There's zero chance of it.
And the committee's been very consistent about that, too.
And like I said, if you watch Alabama play, that team is... Is there any team that you would bet money would beat Alabama right now? Straight up. Neutral field. Are you going to take Clemson over them? I sure wouldn't. Not the way they're playing right now.
Not me. And
the closest one I've got is Oklahoma. Because Oklahoma with Baker Mayfield, that's a team that may sneak up on some people. But the way Alabama's playing right now, they're just massacring teams. They look to be the real deal. I don't think there's any argument to keep Alabama out.
All right. We're going to take a very quick break. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Joining us as he does every week, former NFL and UH cornerback Stanford Route. You guys waste the best conversation off air. What the hell?
I know. Pretty typical. That's why I usually don't like to talk during the breaks, but Stanford comes in and he engages me in conversation. And once I get engaged, I just blab.
Yeah, I know. I was wishing we could record that and just play it back because that was good stuff.
Yeah.
But, let's start with the Texans, though, because...
Oh, yeah. 6-5.
Is there anybody playing better defense than they have over the last four games?
The Chiefs.
I don't know.
Panthers.
Pretty
maybe.
Close. But, it's amazing to me how fast they've turned it around and are actually playing great defense, protecting the football, kind of stuff we talked about all year they needed to do.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing all this without Aaron Foster, without having what you call a franchise quarterback. So they're definitely doing their thing.
Would you say that Brian Hoyer's exceeded expectations this year?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just the simple fact that everybody counted them out just a month ago after the Miami game, and now everything is – on the upswing, and there's no mistakes being made. Offense seems like it's moving efficiently. Not necessarily great, but no mistakes.
Right.
Not too many false starts. Not throwing interceptions. Not drop passes on third downs. Keeping the sticks moving. So I would definitely say that he's exceeded the expectations. And if they mess around here and get in these playoffs, which they're already the number 6 seed right now, he'll definitely have exceeded expectations.
Yeah. How critical are these next three games? You go to Buffalo.
Big.
You've got the Patriots, and then obviously at –
Big.
And Indianapolis.
This is the season right here. These next three games, that's the season. Period.
Is there an expectation? I mean, because I was saying this earlier. I think the two most important games for them are this coming week at Buffalo and then the Indianapolis game.
You're already writing off New England as a loss.
I'm writing off New England as a loss. And I'm just being realistic. I'm writing that off as a loss. And if you're going to be a playoff team, you have to beat Jacksonville and Tennessee.
Yeah,
definitely. So the Buffalo and Indy games, I feel like they're against teams that are on their level. They're against their peers, and that's why it's so important for them to win those. And they've kind of been hit or miss in those games this year because
I agree.
They lost to the Chiefs. They lost to the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost some games to teams that that are going to, at the end of the day, or they lost to the Colts. They lost to some teams that when it comes down to who makes the playoffs, who doesn't.
Those are going
to
be those games
where
they
realize, losses hurt.
Yeah, if we would won that game back in September, yeah, we'd be in the playoffs.
They got one against
They
got one against the Jets,
mm-hmm.
which was another team that was kind of on their level. I feel like these last two against the Bills and the Colts, at the worst case, you can split those two. Mm-hmm. I mean, the worst case. So, but I think that those are the two games that are going to decide whether or not this is a playoff team.
Well, yeah, definitely. But in this league, and especially if you consider yourself a playoff team, even if you are not a playoff team, if you consider yourself a playoff team, then you got to consider yourself on the same level as everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, New England, they won the Super Bowl last year. I get that. But if you really consider yourself as a playoff team, then you got to look at yourself on the same level as New England. So a game like that, you can't automatically just go in thinking that, oh, you know, let's go ahead and just try to put on a good showing and make this competitive. You got to look at that as a game you can actually win. Look at Denver last night. Got the kid Osweiler going in there and coming out with a victory.
Switch it to college for a second. I know he was before your time when he was at UH, but were you surprised to see Clay Helton get the USC job? It seems like an awful big job.
Not really. I think for the past several years, USC has been trying to go for that big splash, like when they had Lane Kiffin, and then they want to go Sarkisian. And this is more of an underrated type of hiring. So I'm not surprised because they've tried the big names. They've tried the names that are out there, and it hasn't worked. You've had, what, four different coaches for USC in the UCLA rivalry the last 4 years with Helton. You had Lane Kiffin. Then you had his replacement, then Sarkisian, and now his replacement in Helton. So – no, I'm not surprised at it at all. I think it's a good hire. They've been doing the thing for the past 7 weeks, ever since Sarkisian left with his alcohol addiction. And the rest remains to be seen of how they fare going forward. But who else would you really go after? Who, Chip Kelly?
Tom Herman.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could do that. But what they say often is the devil you do know is better than the one that you don't know. And at least they know what they have in Clay Helton.
You happy to see Herman hang around for another year?
Oh man, I love that. I love that, and I'm hoping that he will stay for a long, long time. I get it. I know the business, and you can't even blame him for moving to greener pastures if it comes along. You can't even blame him. I'm just hoping that it happens later than sooner.
Stanford Rout, our guest, former NFL and UH cornerback, and when we talked a lot about a little earlier about the bad calls and how common this has become.
Mm-hmm.
And
I hate it.
Well, is it worse now than when you played? Or is it...
You can't even breathe on a receiver without them calling a flag. You can't breathe on them the wrong way, they're going to call a flag. With a quarterback, I'm guessing now, you just got to literally hit the quarterback in his belly button. Because you hit him too low, flag. Hit him too high, flag. Receiver. That I think that's the worst part about it is the hits on defenseless receivers that... This is a game that's based on man strength, grunt physicality, basically like gladiators. And as a coach, your coach tells you to separate the receiver from the ball when the ball is in the air. So you literally have to make a decision, whether it's business or for the love of your team, because if you go and you make that business decision, you're going and you're going to maybe shy away from him just enough to where you don't get the fine. But then the receiver hangs on to the ball, could be a big third down, lead to a touchdown, and y'all lose the game. May not go to the playoffs. Maybe gets the coach fired. Everybody else gets released. Then soon thereafter, all of that. So it's such a muddy water when it comes to these penalties, especially with the defenseless receiver and the quarterback and stuff like that. I don't like it at all.
Well, and Tom Brady even said that the hit on Gronk is part of the problem. Not that it was a dirty hit or anything, but guys have to go low.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you teach guys to tackle now? If you go high, you're going to get a penalty. If you go low at a quarterback, you're getting a penalty. I mean, it's...
I don't know. I honestly don't know how you can teach that. Because even once you get past college, you don't teach tackling in the NFL. You don't. Because everybody's moving at too fast of speeds to where you can actually teach that. That's why guys don't tackle in practice. Because... all it takes is one wrong move. Somebody's got torn ACL, out for the season. Somebody's got a broken collarbone, out for the season on defense. It's very hard to teach it because everybody's moving at such a fast pace, and you got athletes that are bigger, stronger, faster nowadays with the technology, so it's difficult. But as far as everything goes with that defenseless receiver, I don't know. I think that's the worst rule they could have ever put in there, because now you're taking away from the game. It's a physical game. It's an aggressive game. And now you can actually get called for unnecessary roughness. But how is it a physical game then? If you can get called for unnecessary roughness, I'll never understand that. And most players that carry the ball, offensive players, even as a defensive player, I would much rather you hit me up high and I take the chance of a concussion, something like that, than you hit me low. Because knees, you hurt your knee, you're done between now and training camp. You get a concussion, you can be back for the December 13th week.
Quick prediction for UH and Temple. How do you see that going?
U of H is winning.
Sure about that?
U of H is winning.
Okay. All right. I'll take your word for it.
What do y'all think?
I think they should win. I think they're the better team.
Yeah,
great political answer.
Would you have faulted Tom Herman if he would have taken the Georgia job? Or is that one of those jobs? Because I've been saying that's a job, and I think he was foolish if he took the South Carolina or the Missouri job. But a job like Georgia is a job that's a job that you kind of hope to attain. Mm-hmm. When you start out being a coach, that's one of those jobs that
I think
it's a top 10 job in the country. Would you have faulted him if he had taken that job, if it would have been offered to him?
I wouldn't fault him for taking Georgia, South Carolina, or Missouri, or USC. I wouldn't, because it's still SEC. Just a couple years ago, Missouri was in the SEC title game, and that was fresh off of coming out of the Big 12. And they went ahead and shook up the SEC with that whole spread offense attack that they got, and even having those pass rushes with.
What if he would have taken the Virginia Tech job?
That's still ACC, and we're still talking
you
about.
You think that's better?
We're still talking about AAC versus ACC.
Okay.
I hate it. I know that that's not the right thing for me to be saying right now, but you got to think about it. That man has to feed his family, and that man has places he's trying to go in his life, and he's trying to move on to bigger and better things. That's what this world was built on.
Well,
so for him to do that, if he was going to, obviously I wouldn't want to see him go, but I understand, man, this is a business. The only day of the week that it's not a business is on Saturdays for college football.
What I've been saying is a job like Georgia or USC, that's a place where you can legitimately win a national championship. You can lose one game at Georgia or USC and still have a chance to play for a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
You can win every game at UH and not have a chance to.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think if you get a job like that,
that's why I say
I couldn't fault you.
That's why I say with VTech, Missouri, and even South Carolina, because the same way with those schools, you can lose one game at one of those schools and you could still be in line for the college football playoff. Now, U of H, we all get it. You got to win every game. You got to win every game by 30.
And then hope that some other teams lose.
Exactly. So any job that's coming out of the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, I can't really fault a man for that, because it's a Power 5 conference. And so much money is being driven into those conferences, those schools, the BCS Bowls, all of that. You can't fault a man for wanting to provide for his family and moving on to bigger and better things. You can't. You may not like it, but you can damn sure respect it.
See, I think most of those jobs you mentioned, though, he can do better next year. And Missouri, South Carolina, he can do better than those schools.
Yeah, but
what if Texas is open next year? That's a much better job.
No, absolutely.
So,
I mean, it's UT, just like we were talking about last week. But any job that's coming from a Power 5 conference, that's going to be very appetizing. Just off the simple fact that it's a Power 5 conference. So just off of that alone, the road to getting to that college football playoff is so much easier. And then everything off the field, the revenue, man, that's just how those Power 5 conferences are. That's just the way it goes.
All right, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll have the Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day. That's Stanford Route. I guess you're going to be on Hustletown this week?
Yeah, I'll be on Hustletown this week.
All right, so check him out there. Quick break. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Here's Brett Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on the Blitz. Happy Monday. Tune in at 7 tonight for Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis. All right, I have one of the more disgusting gems of the day.
Yum.
So if your kid's in the car, you might want to tune out for a minute after the song. So let's do the gem of the day.
The gem of the day. It's the gem of the day. The Zadok Jeweler gem of the day.
All right, I'll try to keep it as PG as possible. Are you a fan of Switzerland?
Not really.
Me either. John, fan of Switzerland?
Swiss cheese?
You have any?
I'm in on that.
You have any Swiss friends?
No.
Well, if you did, odds are they've probably had relations with a horse. Apparently, there were 105 cases of maltreatment of horses in Switzerland in 2014, 10% of which involved people having relations with them. Apparently, this rate is relatively elevated compared with other types of animals. There are an estimated 110,000 horses living on 18,000 Swiss farms. Experts estimate that 10,000 people in Switzerland are predisposed to zoophilia. Group said the number of unreported horse abuse cases is likely much higher than the reported ones, given that so many people in the country are involved with equestrian activities. Overall, there were 1,709 incidents of abuse against animals in 2014, up from 1,542 the previous year. What the hell is going on? Isn't it? What the hell are you people doing?
I don't know. I mean, to me, like, the Swiss Miss is from Switzerland. She's kind of hot. Like, well, there's ladies there.
Yeah, they're attractive ladies. Well, it doesn't say that all these are men. It says
that's
people.
True. That's true.
Come on, Switzerland. Get your act together. That's your Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the Gem of the Day. The Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
All right. A lot more to get to. We still got another hour, so don't go anywhere. We got lots of good stuff for you.
All right, guys. Going to tell you one more time about attorney Gary Trichter. I've been telling you about him for a long time for good reason. Listen, I don't want you guys to end up in trouble. There's no reason to end up in trouble with the law accused of DUI because Gary Trichter is basically set it up for you. He's a guy who is there for you, who understands the law. And this is something you won't find with most lawyers. That's why you don't want to just go with some Joe Schmo out of the phone book. You know, you're going to be doing a lot of partying over the next month, Christmas parties, things like that. Here's a couple tips, and you can go to his website, TexasDWILaw.com, and these are all listed there. But have your party on a Friday so folks can sleep in the next day or give them the next day off. Encourage guests to designate a volunteer non-drinking driver if they're in groups, or just pay the taxi fare for your guests to and from the party. And during the party, make sure you serve food, water, soft drinks at least 30 minutes before the bar opens. Helps absorb the alcohol and prevent its concentration from getting higher than it would on an empty stomach. Attorney Gary Trichter, if you do find yourself in trouble, Attorney Gary Trichter is there to defend you. He knows that the science behind these police breath and blood tests is very faulty. And he knows how to show that to juries. He's a DWI specialist, one of only four board-certified DWI specialists in the state. And he's right here in Houston. If you failed one of those tests, whether it's DWI or DUI, call attorney Gary Trichter. Put his number on your cell phone right now. 713-524-1010. 713-524-1010. Or visit TexasDWILaw.com. That's 713-524-1010 for Gary Trichter.
A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed.
This is The Blitz on ESPN.